Welcome in, everyone, to the Sunday Nighter on the Talking Tide podcast on the Ryer on YouTube channel. I'm Chase Goodbread, sports columnist with the Tuscaloosa News, along with Travis Ryer, joining remotely for this edition of the Talking Tide podcast, recapping Alabama's 20-9 victory over the LSU Tigers at Bryant-Denny Stadium. The Crimson Tide improves to 6-0 in SEC play with the victory. Kalen DeBoer improves to 12-0 at home in a year plus as coach of the Crimson Tide. Travis, a big win for Alabama. Two more to go in the regular season in the SEC schedule. But this was a pretty wild one considering there were only 29 points put up, right? I mean, a defensive game like this was, typically it's a little bit of a – can be a little bit of a bore, but – a lot of wild stuff happening in this one. It was a fun one.
It was fun, but you know, I would have thought if I had told Alabama fans a week ago, Chase, Alabama's going to beat LSU by 11 points, by two scores, there would have been a lot of anxiety that would have been relieved. I don't get that sense though, not with that second half performance from the Alabama offense. The Alabama run game remains a stick in the craw of a lot of Crimson Tide fans. So, you said it, 6-0 in the league, right on the doorstep now of the Southeastern Conference Championship game and essentially a berth into the college football playoff. But that's not the standard. That alone is not the standard, as we know, for Alabama and or its fan base. So a little more consternation, I would say, the day after.
To your point, one thing that I thought was kind of interesting that I noted, it was a month ago, roughly, I believe, that LSU beat South Carolina by basically the exact same score. That was a 20-10 game. And Brian Kelly walks into the post-game presser. First question, why can't you run the ball? And he blows up about it, right? Gets indignant and incredulous and whatever other adjectives you want to throw in there to describe his reaction to that question. And then Saturday night, Alabama beats a Brian Kelly-less LSU team by almost the same score. Kalen DeBoer walks in, and right out of the gate, people want to know, and it's a fair question because fans want to know. The media questions reflect what the fans are asking, and it's what is going on with that run game. Kalen DeBoer, to his credit, didn't blow up about it. To the contrary, he just said, look, we've got to be better. But DeBoer's answer wasn't any better received, I don't think, by Alabama fans than LSU fans received Kelly's answer.
I think it's because Alabama fans have basically gotten that same answer for a few weeks to more than that now, right, in terms of the run game. It's sort of the default response for the struggles that Alabama continues to have on the ground. And you're right. I think we talked about this in recent weeks about LSU. You could pick a game for LSU. They're basically, I call them the 20-10 Tigers. Whether they win or they lose, seems like the score is always 20-10-ish.
They beat Florida 20-10, right? Yeah, or lost beat, to them, beat, one or the other.
No, beat Florida 20-10, beat South Carolina 20-10, lost to Alabama 20-9. Maybe we should have been, you know, on that last week and picking a score, but certainly there are some things for Alabama to clean up. You know what else has something to do with it? The people you're playing defensively are also getting better. Not that Alabama has been a stalwart on the ground against anybody really in the Southeastern Conference to this point of the season, but if your run game isn't humming when you get into November in general, usually it's not going to find its feet, but it's especially not when you start getting into LSU, Oklahoma. And despite its struggles yesterday against Diego Pavia, that Auburn defense is still going to be a handful, you got to think, later in the month, too.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. A lot of trouble running the ball. LSU didn't run the ball either, right? I mean, it went both ways. The run defenses on both sides performed well, but it's clearly been an issue for this Alabama offense all season. Ryan Grubb, and you saw it early with Alabama, too, when they had a second and short. Early, right? They pound the ball three times in a row, including a fourth down try, and get stuffed for a turnover on downs, right? Yep. They tried I think they went Miller, Simpson, Miller on those three runs, if I'm not mistaken, and came up empty on a second and two, third and one, fourth and one, might have been how that finished. Regardless, they couldn't move the sticks. You kind of knew there that it was going to be the same old, I think, from the Alabama running game. And, you know, I think there are issues definitely up front at the guard spots. That's where blocks are getting missed, I think, for the most part. Getting some blocks missed at tackle too. It's not just on the guards. And as we've talked about, Travis, I don't think Alabama has a star player in the backfield. I do think this. I'm beginning to see, in my opinion, one difference between Jam Miller and Daniel Hill. And one reason I think why Daniel Hill seems to have a little bit more success despite fewer touches is I think Miller sometimes is looking for a bigger crease than he's ever going to get. Whereas Hill seems to be more willing to just take the ball and hammer it wherever it's supposed to go. If the crease is small, he's going to drag somebody for 2 or 3 yards and go down. Miller seems just, I don't know, a little bit more insistent on seeing a bigger hole before he cuts it up. Is that fair? That's what I see.
I wouldn't say he has a great feel for it when it comes to pressing the hole or, having the patience sometimes that it requires. But you know, when I've been asked about this Alabama run game, is it the offensive line? Is it the running backs? My answer has been yes, because as we've talked about before, this is not 2012 Alabama, okay? This is not 2012 up front. This is not 2012 with Eddie Lacy and TJ Yeldon in the backfield. Yeah. When both those guys rushed for over 1,000 yards. So I think you can point just about any area that you want to. The fix for this Alabama run game at this point, in my opinion, Chase, is the offseason. That's when you'll have your best chance to really make marked improvement. You kind of are what you are at this point. And the competition, as I just said, it's not going to get easier. You get to Atlanta, you know you're going to see a team that is going to be tough to run the football against. You get into the college football playoff, it's essentially going to be the same thing. But I did tweet this earlier today, too, on X. And I get it with the fans. And it's not even so much that it isn't sort of Saban era vintage run games. Okay. It's not Derrick Henry in 2015. A lot of fans just want to see some efficiency. When they do run it, they run it for more than 4 yards per carry, which they can't do right now. I understand that. That being said, Alabama in the three games against the rushing offenses that are the best they've seen in conference play this season, Missouri, Georgia, and Vanderbilt, those are three of the top five rushing offenses in the SEC right now. They are 3-0. So again, I understand where the gnashing of teeth is coming in with the inadequate run game, but you know what? Still winning games. And to your point earlier, you know what helps when you can't run the ball as well as you'd like? You don't let the other team run it, which they did a good job against LSU. Sans the one run by Barry in the game Saturday night. They were as fundamentally sound and gap sound and fit sound as you'll see them. And I think that's a good trend for them because it's been sort of an improvement. Now, the quarterback runs come back in this week with John Mateer. So we'll see how they handle that.
Right.
But there's a lot of things going on right now. And I just don't think you fix them in November. You fix them in January through August, hopefully.
Yeah, Harlan Berry did bust one for 37 yards on Alabama. Big run. It looked to me like Nakai Hill Green might have jumped the wrong gap on that play and opened things up for Barry to spring one. But other than that, like you said, extremely effective. Caden Durham only got 3 carries all night. A little bit of a surprise there. 4 yards for him. And obviously Garrett Nussmeier is not really a rushing threat, so they really didn't have to worry about the quarterback run until Michael Van Buren came in, and he can do a few things with his feet. He's the future, I think, for LSU at that position. So they got to look at him. Garrett Nussmeier, 18 for 21 and gets yanked, but he couldn't push the ball down the field at all. 121 yards on 21 attempts, not going to get it done.
He reminds me of, was it, I guess, David Carr of the Carr brothers with the Texans. And after he had been hit and sacked so many times, it sort of just went away from him. Right. Garrett Nussmeier had that feel, especially on that sack that led to his benching, because he's at a point, he knows he can't do that there. And Yonzi Pierre is a very good pass rusher, but that was a gift in a lot of ways. That's true freshman level pocket navigation by Garrett Nussmeier. And, you know, Frank had seen enough. And so they make the change there. I'm with you. I think that the future is what we saw for LSU at the quarterback position after that. But it is tough when you're 18 of 21. Yeah. And what that gets you is a benching.
No doubt. And didn't have much help up front either. Number 57 for LSU. I don't know freshman that I can left pronounce tackle. His name. Yeah, he had an awful. He gave up both of Pierre's sacks. He had a couple penalties, I think, in the second half as well. Lot of struggles at left tackle for LSU in that one. Pierre with another big game. There's a two-sack game for him. Of course, he got a strip down there at the end. And one of three fumbles forced by the Alabama defense. Bray Hubbard ripped one out early, Travis. And that recovery ended up being a positive for LSU just because of the way the ball bounced down the field a little bit. You saw a lot of frustration from Hubbard, obviously, about the way that play unfolded. But then how about Nakai Hill-Green, aforementioned, with a strip and a recovery of his own. Big play for Alabama there as well.
Yeah, the inside linebacker play has gradually improved from about the third or fourth game of the season to this point. I think it started probably more with Justin Jefferson. And then now you've seen Nakai Hill-Green and Deontay, it seems like, continues to get better and better the further he gets removed from that injury, speaking of Oklahoma, late in last season. But the fans are still a little unrestless, Chase. What about this theory from Pete Tennyson? Pete says he thinks Alabama was looking past LSU to Oklahoma. I struggle with that one a little bit, Chase. It's hard for me to imagine any Alabama team looking past LSU, although if it happened, it probably happened 4 years ago, that 2021 game in Tuscaloosa. People talk about Saturday night like that was the ugliest performance by Alabama in a win over LSU. You remember 2021 when you were worried about Bryce Young being able to make it back to his car after the game? That was rough. That was certainly rough. But what do you think about that theory? I don't see how a team coming off a bye week would, first of all, overlook anyone, and certainly not overlook a team like LSU.
Yeah, I'm not sure I can buy that. I do think the anticipation for OU is going to be super high, obviously, because that was the game where the season just completely fell apart for Alabama last year. That was the game that really left a sour taste in everybody's mouth, players and fans alike. So I do recognize that OU game is one that Alabama players have probably had circled on the calendar for 12 months now. But that doesn't necessarily mean you overlook the team ahead of them. They certainly could not afford to overlook LSU. They didn't look great against LSU offensively, but look, the defense didn't give up a touchdown, Travis. I mean, the defense showed up all night long.
Now, let me ask you this. And as far as the defensive performance, do you devalue it some? Because LSU just had some critical, critical mistakes. The 4th-and-1, Alabama goes with the late stem pre-snap. And that was after a review that erased an LSU first down because you had a sliding quarterback situation. They went back to review it, and the start of the slide was short of the marker, and then you jump off sides. Boy, pre-snap penalties for LSU, that was a big help to Alabama. So how do you kind of weigh all that with what we saw from the defense Saturday night?
You know, I definitely recognize that LSU is a fairly broken team offensively. I think you could certainly make the case that Alabama played better defense relative to the competition and giving up 20 to Tennessee than it did and giving up 9 to LSU, for instance. So, yeah, I get that. LSU offensively has been a mess all year. I mean, we kind of talked about it at the top of the show. I get that. At the same time, Alabama's been playing good pass defense. The run defense has been spotty here and there for sure, but pass defense has been good all season long. They've only given up 7 touchdown passes all year. That's tied for the lowest count in the SEC. They're only giving up 6.1 yards per attempt. I think that ranks 2nd or 3rd in the league. So, you know, the pass defense has been there all year, Travis.
And maybe you get Quay Rousseau back this week.
Yep.
That could be huge, no doubt about it. We have Icy Sam chiming in here, Chase. He says, Ty has a turnover in the last 5 ball games, and maintaining possession of the ball is going to be very important if Bama going to pull out a victory this coming Saturday, especially with the heat that OU can put on the quarterback position. This is going to be more complete than even what LSU put out there, because LSU up front, not exactly dynamic. Pyburn's more of a power guy than a, you know, like a Dylan Stewart type. Mm-hmm. You know, you had the 2 edges for South Carolina that were really problematic. I think there's going to be some big availability report news this week for Oklahoma too, because they had a couple of their key guys in that front 7 coming out of Tennessee the last time we saw this OU defense. We'll get more into this in the midweeker, that are questionable, you would think, kind of like Whit Weeks was going into this game for LSU.
Yeah, and LSU blitzed Alabama quite a bit. I think LSU had like 15, 16 blitzes against Alabama. They came with some pressure. Ty Simpson's not scared of the blitz. I think he was 10 out of 15.
Stood in there.
Blitz, yeah, against LSU. He's had several games this year where he's burned blitzes. Mm-hmm. And so OU, on the other hand, similar, I think, in some ways to South Carolina, they can get heat on you without bringing that blitz, right? I think they can get after you with 4 pretty well, and that's where you got problems, I think, if you're able to get in Simpson's face with only 4. Now you've got 7 in coverage, and he's got 1 less place to go without the blitz.
OU not as good on the back end as LSU, I would say. So more important for Oklahoma to get home with 4. Because if they have to bring the blitz and you get the matchups with that secondary that Alabama could get, that could be really beneficial to the Crimson Tide. I see Sam also asking, Chase, do we have a good, bad, and ugly for the Bama-LSU game? Do you have one of each for Alabama from this matchup? If you had to pick one between a good, bad, and ugly, where are we going?
Let's go off the beaten path for the good. I might be stealing one from you. How about Connor Talty for the good, right? Hits a 44-yarder, hits a 45-yarder. It's a tight game. It's a game where 3 points matters. It's one thing to kick them from 45 when you're beating a team by 21. It's something else when it's a 1-score game and you're trying to give your team a little bit more breathing room. So I'll start with a good. Connor Talty came through for them. I know he missed one, but I think he those were 2 big kicks he had.
They were. He missed the chip shot, which he's been making those. It's the 40 pluses that have been a little bit hit and miss. And I'm with you, because to me, a game ender essentially is the same thing as a game winner. You know, the one that he kicked late, that ended the game, essentially. And it wasn't the best of holds. He had the laces into him, and he just absolutely drilled it. So I like that choice there. For me, with the good, I'll go Alabama playing relatively clean again. What was it, 2 penalties for 25 yards?
Renaud had one, and then they had special teams penalty too, right?
Yep, blocking the back. They were both pretty costly, because Alabama on the Renaud face mask was in good shape to get off the field there. Mm-hmm. And you know, it happens. You understand that. And then on the Adams punt return, they were going to be in really good shape. But they had the block in the back early, I think, by Xavien Brown. So, but overall, the penalties were a huge part of this game, because LSU multiple times, shot themselves in the foot, and mistakes in general were problematic for LSU. What about a bad for you, Chase?
Not to be repetitive, but how do you not go with the run game there?
Yeah. other than Ty Simpson with the 17-yard run, which was the longest run for Alabama in the game, which was really a big play because LSU got hit with the illegal hands to the face on that play. It turned into like a 32-yarder
right
on Simpson's run. It was really maybe the only run I saw all night where, well, Lottie Brooks broke some tackles on a quick ball. Jeremy Bernard still is good that way. Simpson impressed me, ran through a guy, got to the sticks, and then you got the extra 15. For me, the bad would be Ty's first series of the third quarter coming out after that just two-throw sequence to end the first half where that was high-level elite throws, quarterback play from Ty.
Right.
And they go down and they get that 17-3 lead. And then to come out and struggle like he did and had the blitz pick up on the deep ball to Jeremy Bernard and he just misses him. Jeremy made a hell of a catch earlier in that possession on a third and long to keep the series alive. I would say Ty in general, maybe in the second half. I know you could go offense, but Ty wasn't great in that second half last night.
No, he wasn't. And I guess if we're going to switch it to ugly, I'll stay right there with Simpson and go with the lone turnover Alabama had on the strip in the pocket. And, you know, look, there was another one against Missouri, I think, a strip in the pocket. I think I want to say that was somewhere in the middle eight up there in Columbia for that strip. But, you know, sometimes you put it on the quarterback if he's holding the ball a little bit too long. Sometimes it's on the offensive line if they're not protecting well enough. You kind of take those – when you're talking about a strip in the pocket, Travis, you kind of take it case by case as far as who's to blame. Sometimes you just got to tip your hat to the defender too.
You do. And, again, this is a really good defense of Blake Baker for LSU. So you need to at least credit LSU with some of that. No doubt about it. As for my ugly, as much as I was with you on Talty and the two makes, you can't miss 28 yarders or 26 yarders. Mm-hmm. Can't miss it. That's ugly. Yeah. And he would probably be the first to tell you that. And yes, that was another hold where it was a little bit not what you would want, but from that distance, you got to make it. I think the snap was a little bit high and inside on Dowd, and maybe that sped Talty up a little bit, but 28 yards, 26 yards. You got to make all those. And so there you go. I see Sam. You know what's bad about that, though, is that we went with two negatives and only one positive in an 11-point win by Alabama. So
right.
I know that's just how that shakes out, but there you go.
Couple of throws for Simpson I wanted to highlight, too, Travis. I thought were just phenomenal. Both of them really led receivers perfectly in stride. One was the deep ball to Quavis down the visiting sideline. Quavis ran an out and up, and really Simpson let the ball go before he was even open. And he managed to get maybe a yard of space between him and the defensive back who was covering him. And Simpson just put the ball right on his hands, right in stride for a big gain, 32 yards. Then he comes around a little bit later and does the exact same thing on an even deeper ball to Lottie Brooks, the one that looked like it was incomplete, but it turned out it was a completion and the ground caused the ball to pop out. I mean, that was a deep ball, and Brooks did not have to break stride one bit, and that one made him hit him right in the hands as well.
Yeah, he had some anticipation on a deep crosser, I think, to Jeremy too.
Yeah.
That was really, really good. You know, look, Grubb still has stuff. He shows that every week. They split out Caden Proctor wide this time and kind of fake a quick screen to him and then hit the middle of the field and rip it with Quavis down the seam.
Mm-hmm.
That was some good stuff. There were still plenty of positives. It's just that it was kind of a tale of two quarters and then two more for Ty in the offense.
Let's move to the Ryan Grubb portion of the program. He got into his bag pretty good, Travis. We saw a lot. I think you just mentioned the seam throw to Quavis. Quavis was lined up at left tackle on that play. Caden Proctor was out in the slot, basically switched him. LSU not ready for it. Quavis really kind of all by himself in the seam, an easy throw for Ty Simpson for a big gain. So pretty clever there, certainly from Grubb. But he was also, you know, he called a little razzle dazzle early, I think, with the first play to Brooks. And then you had a double pass from Bernard to Brooks that went on a third and long that was down in the LSU red zone. Didn't quite make the first down on that play. Did you happen to see, Travis, on that double pass from Simpson to Bernard and then back to Brooks? Simpson, after he throws it to Bernard, he goes straight down the middle of the field. He gives him the Randy Moss arm, you know, like, hit me, I'm open. I'm shaking my head thinking, please, that don't get your head knocked off by a safety out there. I mean, that my hope for Simpson was that he is really, truly not even a read for Bernard on that play.
I wouldn't bet against it. You know, Grubb may have Bernard working the progression at this point, going from the one to the two, or the, you know, that type of deal. I thought Bernard's throw back across the field to Brooks was a hell of a throw too. I mean, wasn't a safe throw. That was a lot of bad things could have happened there, but Jeremy Bernard, it just seems like on a weekly basis, just continues to reaffirm that yes, he is a really, really, really high level receiver, but even more so, he's an even better just football player. Every week I'm convinced you could put him at a number of positions and even on defense, and he'd probably be just fine.
He could. I thought it was interesting, some of what we saw from Grubb formationally too. We saw a power eye look from Ryan Grubb.
They got 1 yard.
With Josh Cuevas as the fullback, that play didn't go anywhere, but I like the formation. And then what about going under center empty on the jet sweep that also went nowhere?
Yeah, but that was Lane-ish. I got Lane vibes from empty jet. Yeah, I know what you're talking about there, no doubt.
Grubb definitely in his bag, like we haven't seen before this year. I mean, and he's had some wild nights as a play caller for sure, but this one. He got a little deeper in there than usual, I think, for him. All right, Travis, going to move on here in this portion of the Talking Tide podcast. Want to thank our listeners and viewers and ask you to check out Parker Covers Alabama, a nonprofit 501c3 at parkercoversalabama.com, supporting wheelchaired Alabama residents, inspired by Mike Parker, friend of mine, and Travis's. Once again, that's ParkerCoversAlabama.com. Check out the website. Donate if you would. All right, the Talkin' Tide podcast on the Ryer on YouTube channel. Moving on and taking a look at some scores around the Southeastern Conference. Really only 4 games to discuss, Travis. It was a light week for action. There were 5 teams that were idle. Ole Miss played the Citadel. We won't even go there. Which leaves us with only 4 contests other than Alabama, and that would be A&M knocking off Missouri in Columbia handily, that one 38-17. Georgia by 20 in Starkville, 41-21. You had Vanderbilt nipping Auburn 45-38 in overtime, and then Kentucky just drummed the Gators in Lexington 38-7. Let's start with Auburn-Vanderbilt, Travis. That game had quite the finish. We saw Vanderbilt, I thought, make a questionable decision late in that game, going for a 4th down when they were in field goal range and could have gone up by 3 points. They decide to go for it. Auburn stuffs them. That's essentially what put the game, I think, in overtime. And then they were able to pull it out from there and win it by a touchdown. But I guess all Auburn needed to get the offense going was to get Hugh Freeze out of there, right?
Yeah, that was the stinker of the week for me. Clark Lee not kicking the field goal there with a minute left, and he's got a good kicker, I think.
Yeah.
42-yard field goal, you go up 3. I know in his post-game remarks, he simultaneously said, well, we're not risk-averse around here. But then he adds, I was also worried about the time left on the clock that Auburn would have if we kicked the field goal and went up 3. So which is it, Clark?
Right.
Are you just risk adverse? You're risk adverse on offense, but not defense.
Right.
You know, I didn't like that, but you know, I think his aura is so powerful around that program. he's able to get Clark Lee to do things that Clark Lee never would have tried before Diego Pavia. So I kind of get it from that perspective. Boy, Auburn found some offense as soon as Hugh Freeze left the building, apparently. Those wide receivers looked more like what you would have expected going into this season. So it's bittersweet if you're an Auburn fan. You finally got to see some real production on the offensive side of the ball. But it's, you know, it kind of doesn't matter at this point. And Vanderbilt stays in this thing, man. They stay alive in this college football playoff hunt. And that matchup in Knoxville with Tennessee down the road just continues to look bigger and bigger.
You know, you mentioned a minute ago you thought Vanderbilt's kicker was pretty good and how they should have kicked right there near the end of the fourth quarter, which triggered my brain on OU's kicker. And I'm sure we'll talk a little bit more about this midweek. But
Lance Armstrong, their kicker.
I want your take on these football pants on this kicker, Tate Sandell. And if he's around still, I want Pops's take on those shorty shorts too. What about?
Yeah, well, you never know with Pops. So I think I know, but yeah, I just think if you're Brent Venables at this point, if the guy's going to make three from 50 plus like he did on the road at Tennessee, you're going to bite your tongue. You know, you're going to swallow it a little bit. He's had a great year, but that whole thing with the pants and the shorts, basically now that has jumped a shark a while back. Whatever you think of the NFL, they have a very stringent policy on uniform. Mm-hmm. They will fine you heavily, even if you don't have the right socks on or things like that. We've reached that point, I think, with college football, and it's not just him. I mean, I don't get these linebackers you'll see or defensive ends that are basically playing in shorts with no coverage of their knees or their, you know, even their lower thighs at this point.
Yeah, I don't get it. And by the way, before Alabama fans point too long of a finger in Tate Sandell's direction, let's not forget Robbie Utes' football pants last year. Those weren't much longer than Sandell's, if at all.
Yeah, I mean, they're absolutely. That's what I'm saying. It's line of scrimmage guys, front seven guys, that are doing it. That's what I don't get. But there you go.
What do you make of Kentucky blowing out the gates in Lexington?
Who didn't have Cutter Bowley blowing out DJ Lagway in the preseason, right? We all had that on our 2025 CFB bingo card. We absolutely thought Cutter Bowley would be just too much for DJ Lagway and the Florida Gators. Boy, I think if the Gators could fire the interim, their fan base would be all for it after Saturday night. That's where are we eventually going to get to that, Chase, where we've got interim coaches so early in seasons that we end up firing the interim?
Yeah, gotta go. Second interim coming in. Oh, unreal. Yeah, it was ugly. By the way, Kendrick Law, former Alabama wide receiver, had six catches in that one.
It's been good to see him find a really, really good home for him. And they use him. If you watch Kentucky with him, they use him the way you ought to use Kendrick Law.
Plays a lot of snaps. Doesn't always get a ton of catches.
And I'm not saying if he stayed at Alabama, he'd be on the field. I get it. You know, I'll get this in the comments. Well, we got four guys that are too good for Kendrick. That's not the point. It's just that Kendrick Law is a good football player, and it's good to see him in a place where he's been able to thrive pretty much this year.
No doubt about it. Georgia getting it done against Mississippi State. Not a surprise there. The Bulldogs fall to 1-5 in SEC play. And then A&M knocks off Missouri pretty easily. Zollers, that third-string quarterback, had a miserable game for the Tigers. Not to be unexpected, first career start against an undefeated team, the number one team in the league right now. So I get it, but it could be a rough finish for Missouri this year.
Yeah, but Chase, they lead the SEC in rushing. That's what matters.
Right. Yeah.
They're the number one rushing offense in the SEC. Don't worry about those four or five losses.
Yeah. Ahmad Hardy had 100 yards against A&M and a 21-point loss.
They can run the ball. You know, they can run the ball. Here's the thing about A&M. We're not going to see them in the regular season against Alabama. We're not going to see him in the regular season against Georgia. We're not going to see him in the regular season against Ole Miss. Mm-hmm. But the eye test still tells me this isn't a fun team to play.
No.
Because they're sort of like Saban era. They want to be the team that you absolutely hate to play. Physical, run the football, pop you in the mouth. And they are dynamic, too. And they're not just 3 yards in a cloud of dust and, you know, play good defense and kick the ball well. They did some good things in that transfer portal, especially with Casey Concepcion at the wide receiver position.
Yeah, they did. It did. They're going to be a handful. That Texas A&M Texas game is – it could be interesting. Look, and here's what's interesting, too. That A&M Texas game, which we know is obviously a huge rivalry, that game could still be relevant because if Texas can manage to win in Athens, and I think Georgia wins that game, but it's not – look, Georgia's not world beaters. We've talked about that. Texas could find a way in Athens. If Texas wins in Athens, they're going to be taking on A&M at the end of the season potentially to knock A&M out of the SEC title game because Texas is still sitting on just one SEC loss. Mm-hmm. They get a head-to-head over A&M. They'll have a tiebreaker over A&M.
I think Texas and Georgia are pretty similar in that they may be finding it at the right time. Whatever their ceilings are, they're going to get to them before the end of the regular season. So that makes this weekend's matchup very fascinating in Athens. And I agree. I think Georgia is similar to Texas too, in that no matter what happens, you know, this is it for Georgia this weekend in SEC play. They're done. Mm-hmm. So win or lose, they're going to be sitting around for a couple weeks to see how things shake out because they get Tech, and that's not a conference game, but relative to importance could be their equivalent of Texas A&M.
Yeah.
Even though it's not a conference game, or it hasn't been for about 100 years, I guess.
No, been a long time. No doubt about it. So, all right, that is going to do it for this edition of the Talking Tide podcast on the Ryer on YouTube channel. I want to thank our listeners and viewers. Encourage you to rejoin us for the midweeker on Wednesday night when we preview the Crimson Tide's home game against the Oklahoma Sooners. Until then, for Travis Ryer, I'm Chase Goodbread of the Tuscaloosa News, and we will talk to you next time.